Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, China After Mao, The Rise of a Superpower, is a nonfiction history by Frank de Kutter that examines China's transformation from the end of Mao's rule to the consolidation of a global power under the Communist Party. Drawing on archival materials and political and economic analysis, the book questions the familiar story that China rose through a smooth, deliberate process of reform and opening. Instead, it presents the post-Mao era as a period shaped by improvisation, internal party control, selective liberalization, and persistent authoritarian rule. De Kutter is especially concerned with the gap between official narratives and the realities revealed by party documents, bank records, and policy decisions. The book covers the long arc of reform, growth, and tightening state power, showing how economic expansion coexisted with censorship, surveillance, and political monopoly. Its purpose is not simply to recount economic modernization, but to reinterpret how that modernization happened and what it meant for the Chinese Communist Party and for the outside world. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the myth of a smooth reform era after Mao. A central argument in the book is that China's rise was not the result of a clean, carefully managed transition from socialism to market capitalism. De Kutter instead emphasizes contingency, disorder, and political improvisation. Reforms often emerged from trial and error, local experimentation, and shifting party compromises rather than from a master plan. This matters because it challenges the standard narrative that Chinese leaders simply designed a successful modernization strategy and executed it with discipline. The book presents a more unsettling picture. Officials often reacted to crises, shortages, and international pressures as they came up, while public rhetoric described the process as coherent and ideologically controlled. By stressing accident and opportunism, De Kutter also shows how growth can be misread if analysts look only at official slogans or aggregate statistics. The result is a revisionist account that treats the post-Mao boom not as proof of administrative brilliance, but as a product of political survival instincts, economic experimentation, and favorable global conditions. Secondly, party monopoly over power remained the real constant. The book argues that economic change did not bring political liberalization. Even as markets expanded and foreign investment increased, the Communist Party retained its monopoly on authority and kept decisive control over major institutions. De Kutter treats this continuity as more important than the visible changes in consumer life or industrial output. He shows that the party never abandoned its commitment to rule, and that reforms were always bounded by the need to preserve political supremacy. This helps explain why economic opening did not evolve into a democratic transition. In the book's interpretation, the party accepted selected market mechanisms because they strengthened the regime, not because they weakened it. That logic also sheds light on later developments under Xi Jinping, who appears not as a total break from the past, but as an intensification of long-standing habits of control. The book, therefore, reframes China's modernization as authoritarian adaptation. The system changed in methods, but not in its fundamental political purpose. Thirdly, archival evidence as a challenge to official memory. One of the book's distinguishing features is its reliance on archival sources that were previously difficult or impossible to access, including party meeting records and confidential reports. De Kutter uses these materials to reconstruct how decisions were actually discussed inside the system, and to contrast those internal debates with the polished version presented by state propaganda. This archival approach gives the book its critical force. It is not just arguing against orthodoxy in theory. It is trying to show how the documentary record undermines official self-representation. The method also allows the author to highlight the importance of informal practices, hidden compromises, and policy confusion that are often absent from public histories of China's rise. At the same time, the book's evidentiary style creates a sharper, more skeptical reading of the regime than works based mainly on published speeches or economics indicators. Readers encounter a history built from the machinery of the party itself, which makes the argument especially pointed. The state's own records reveal both its ambitions and its limitations. Fourthly, economic growth built on state power, shadow practices, and global opportunity. The book does not deny that China experienced dramatic economic expansion. Instead, it argues that growth was shaped by a combination of state direction, opportunistic policy shifts, external demand, and changing world conditions. De Kutter pays attention to sectors such as banking, industrial policy, trade, and currency management to show that the rise was embedded in a heavily controlled political economy. He also points to informal and less transparent mechanisms, including shadow banking and the influence of party-connected interests, to suggest that the public image of orderly development obscures a more fragmented reality. A further dimension is the role of the outside world. Western firms, investors, and governments often assumed that engagement would liberalize China. But the book argues that global capital frequently strengthened a system that remained politically closed. In this sense, the book is not only about domestic policy, but also about the international environment that enabled China's ascent. The rise to superpower status is therefore presented as neither purely internal nor purely market-driven, but as the result of a distinctive blend of state power and global opportunity. Lastly, a warning about surveillance, nationalism, and Western misreading. Beyond economic history, the book is also an argument about political consequences. Decoder emphasizes the growth of a deeply entrenched dictatorship, an extensive security apparatus, and an increasingly sophisticated surveillance state. This is important because it counters the optimistic belief that prosperity would naturally soften authoritarian rule. Instead, the book suggests that material success helped finance and stabilize more intrusive forms of control. It also argues that many observers in the West misunderstood China by focusing too narrowly on growth rates and consumer change while underestimating the regime's strategic goals. According to this view, the party never intended to join a liberal democratic order on equal terms. It intended to preserve its own system and strengthen its position within the international hierarchy. The book, therefore, has a clear interpretive purpose to warn readers that economic integration does not necessarily imply political convergence. This makes it especially relevant to readers interested in how authoritarian states adapt, how global expectations can be misplaced, and why China's rise should be read as both an economic and geopolitical story. In conclusion, China After Mao will be most valuable to readers who want a critical, document-based account of modern China rather than a celebratory story of economic success. It is especially suited to students of Chinese history, political science, international relations, and economic policy, as well as general readers who want to understand why so many assumptions about China's rise have proved too optimistic. The book offers practical intellectual value by connecting economics to power. It shows how growth, reform, surveillance, and party control develop together instead of in sequence. That makes it useful for anyone trying to evaluate authoritarian modernization, state capitalism, or the political limits of market reform. What sets it apart from many similar books is its insistence that China's transformation was neither smooth nor liberating, and that the Communist Party's monopoly on power remained the core fact throughout. Rather than treating reform as a path away from dictatorship, Decoder argues that reform became one more tool of authoritarian survival. That revisionist stance, supported by archival evidence, gives the book a sharper and more skeptical profile than standard accounts of China's economic miracle. If you would like to support Frank Decoder, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.